Good afternoon. I'd like to thank Albert and Debbie for inviting me, and to you for staying this late in the afternoon. I will switch gears after the presentations of Dr. Ribeiro and Janice, and now moving from the genome to the actual gene function. And as Dr. Ribeiro mentioned, sometimes you have to tell the panels what you're going to use your knowledge for. So the first question fits into his philosophy, that you have sometimes to justify your hunger for knowledge. So basically, we all know that emerging diseases are a current concern in worldwide, both for human disease, in the case of Aedes aegypti, which is another insect that I work with, and the tick Boophilus microplus. So when I joined A&M, I had an ongoing interest in endocrinology, but to get the first funding for this project, we have to ask this question: can we discover new targets as we study endocrinology? So in terms of the million-dollar question, which is a novel pesticide target? I'm sorry. So one simple observation is that GPCRs are druggable targets and the targets of known drugs in the pharmaceutical industry. And as I'm a toxicologist, it was very interesting to see that 217 GPCRs, and now even more than this, are targets for drugs. And the rest of the targets are similar to the targets that we know for pesticides. So a very interesting observation is that only one pesticide, amitraz, targets an GPCR, and this happens to be an acaricide. So my simple conclusion was that maybe I should study the GPCRs and also to learn how ticks and mosquitoes function. So this idea evolves to, well, a target is good, but we need to find selective targets. At that time, a little bit later than I began working on this, the Drosophila genome and the Anophila genomes came about, and we just heard about the Ixodes genome and work that is ongoing in Boophilus in terms of sequencing. And there is a lot of potential here for novel gene function investigation. And in the case of peptide GPCRs, which is my particular interest, you see that there is a smaller set of genes, but still many with unknown function. So what to do in blood feeders? I'm also having ongoing interest in water balance, and here we had the opportunity to compare two very different blood feeders, mosquitoes and ticks, and see how they do regulate this phenomenon of having a high load in water, protein, and so forth. Now, the rationale for industry is that you have to find a druggable target, and you have to prove to them that that target can be amenable to disruption. So the idea is that we also have to find targets that are selective to non-target organisms. Specifically, small molecules are more amenable to disruption because you can synthesize a small molecule that can be easily or more easily deployed. So we are working in my lab in two families of GPCRs, family A and family B. Now we're working in mosquitoes, but today I will talk about one neuropeptide receptor from family A. All of you know that GPCRs are characterized by a 7 transmembrane region structure, and they bind ligands. So what is the highlights of our endocrinology work so far? I'm not a tick person, actually. I was not trained as a tick physiologist, so I'm a tick physiologist by playing by ear, in a way. But it seems that we play a little bit well, or we were just lucky that nobody else had done anything before us in terms of neuropeptide receptors, just because it was difficult to know how they look or what they were. So we began in 96, 97, 98, running some degenerate PCRs and trying to fish receptors. And we were lucky enough that we cloned the kinin receptor from the tick. And this was the first neuropeptide receptor known from any tick species. Subsequently, we contributed to the discovery of the first neuropeptide from ticks in collaboration with the scientists at the Saxon Academy of Sciences. So I will tell you a little bit about this road that is a very convoluted road with many detours. So again, we are trying to know the functions of these receptors in ticks by many different approaches. One is RNAi, and we're conducting this in Mexico just because we cannot have Bophylos microplasts in Texas because it's such a dangerous vector of disease for cattle. And so Consuelo Almazan is my collaborator in Ciudad Victoria and the Universidad Autónoma of Tamaulipas. We have tried vaccination of cattle, and I will tell you about this in a second. And most of what I will tell you about today is what have we done with these receptors in our approach to understand the structure activity of these receptors and find novel pesticide leads, perhaps, or just tools to study endocrinology. So we began with small molecules, the kinins. I told you we cloned this kinin receptor, and we had more evidence and work in mosquitoes have shown that these increased diuresis in Aedes. They also were discovered, actually, the kinins through this hindgut assay in roaches, in which kinins stimulate gut contraction. From the phytophagous insects, we have evidence that helicokinin increases mortality and decreases weight in larvae, in phytophagous larvae, in Helicobacter virescens, and also that they stimulate enzyme release. Now, nothing is known so far in ticks. There are no kinin-predicted sequences, to my knowledge, today, and even an analysis of the possible peptides present in the genome has not shown any predicted kinin hormone, but we know that the receptor is there. This is the structure of kinins. They're highly conserved peptides, and most of what is required for activity is this pentapeptide core. So we have a phenylalanine that is absolutely required, and then this fourth position can be histidine, asparagine, serine, or tyrosine, and then serine, proline, and alanine. So we began to, wanted to know what was the structure of this kinin peptide. So we collaborated with Ron Nachman and Suzanne Nupert and Dr. Predel. And the idea was to immunolocalize these peptides so that then they could apply the mass spectrometry to isolate the peptide. So in what I'm showing you here is the synganglion of Ixodes ricinus, but it's the same thing in Bophylos microplasts, so the same results are present. And here you have both leukokinin immunoreactivity. You can see these cells here are in green. Highly abundant immunoreactivity, and for periviscerokinin is in red, and you can see cells here, T4, T3, all of these co-immunolocalized. So at the Saxon Academy of Sciences, they took these cells and they ran mass spectrometry, which resulted in the isolation, not of the kinin that we were looking for, but of periviscerokinin. So this was the road first turn. You not always get what you want, but it still was an important contribution that we published in 2005. So here are the sequences of the known periviscerokinins from insects, and both in Ixodes and Bophylos, the sequence is absolutely conserved. And we're now trying to clone this receptor for validation of the function. So again, what is the function of kinins in animals? We know that in insects, kinins bind to a kinin receptor. In this case, it's the model of the Malpighian tubule of Aedes, and they work through the calcium cascade for excretion of chloride. And there is a debate in the literature about if in Aedes also this occurs through paracellular, via paracellular junctions. So what we did is a student of mine, Steve Holmes, first studied the expression of the receptor transcript through the different life stages of the tick, and we found that the receptor is indeed, at least the transcript is present in all life stages. So afterwards, then we studied the tissue distribution of the receptor, and you can see that it's present in all tissues. Here is the beta-actin, and here we have the receptor. We expected more transcript in the Malpighian tubule, so we tried through different primer sets just in case something was wrong with the reaction, but it seems that there is a little bit less expression in the Malpighian tubule of the tick with respect to the other tissues. So this is the approach that we use in my laboratory. This is a busy slide, but I'll walk you through it. Basically, we begin with cloning genes. BG, before genome, was with the degenerate primers, as Dr. Rivero mentioned. Of course, post-genome is in silico. We try to learn about the biological significance of these proteins through immunolocalization or in situ hybridization. And then we try to prove their functional, the function in vitro. So we have developed two systems to express the receptors, and we develop calcium bioluminescent assays and calcium fluorescent assays to prove activity. So the idea is that once we verify the function, we collaborate with Ron, and he designs different peptides just to learn the structure-activity relationships of these peptides. And then we are right now at the step of biological evaluation of some of these agonists. We are also, in parallel, screening some small combinatorial libraries. So this is how kinins work in insects. We know that kinin binds to the receptor. It activates a GQ protein. This activates phospholipase C, and you will see intracellular calcium release. So using this assay, this was the first assay we developed with the fluorescence confocal microscopy. You will see cells that are expressing the receptor with, this is the background fluorescence. Upon application of the ligand, there is intracellular calcium release. So here the white corresponds to high calcium release, so the whiter, the more activity, and you can see different cells reacting at different times. So in real time, this is the background fluorescence. We apply now the kinin, and then you will see immediately how fast the cells respond. So what we do is we measure the fluorescence in each of these cells, and then we calculate EC50s with this system. It's a very powerful system and very sensitive, but as you could see, there are only a few cells that can be analyzed at a time. So with this system, my student also proved that the receptor was indeed functional. These are design kinins that Ron Nachman synthesized for us. And as you can see, the EC50 is really low, 4, 5, 8 nanomolar, which is the endogenous level of a hormone. We tried the muscakinin from housefly with a little bit less activity, and just as a control, a mammalian peptide was completely non-active. So we're pretty confident that we have the kinin receptor. So, but this was too slow for us, so we developed now a bioluminescent assay that has the same principle. It's a little bit less sensitive, but it's very useful for screening compounds if we were to go to synthetic compounds that have a low solubility, because you can use DMSO up to 3 or 4% and maintain viability of the cells. And we use it, of course, in a plate format. It's a semi-throughput system because we still need to, every time, transiently express the protein aquarine that is sensitive to calcium. So our cells are expressing permanently the receptor, but this mitochondrial protein has to be transfected every time. So this is my postdoc, Suparna. By the way, I'm looking for a postdoc because she's leaving. And this is the machine that we use. And instead of fluorescence, you can see here in the screen, what we measure is light units. And with this, we have done many structural activity studies. Just to make a long story short, we have done this with both the mosquito and the tick receptor. But in both, we have found the following, that in the pentapeptide core that is here, phenylalanine 1 and tryptophan 4 are absolutely required for activity. But as we replace the other amino acids with alanine, we don't see loss of activity. So these are the two essential ones. If we replace the amide, you completely lose activity. So the amide is essential. And based on some of these results, we also Ron developed a restricted conformation analog that has the same activity as a kinin analog, and we published this in 2006. So the model so far is that the kinin has this beta turn, and he proved this through his peptide studies, and phenylalanine 1 and tryptophan 4 appear to interact with the receptor surface. Now, if we wanted to use this for endocrinological studies or even as a pesticide lead, we need more stable compounds because these peptides will be very quickly degraded and there are problems in delivering a peptide. So the first step was to modify the structure of the peptide and make it resistant to proteases. So the trick that he uses, and this is his work in developing this synthetic analogs, is to use amino acids that have their beta amino acids that have an extra CH2 group, so they are not recognized by proteases. So this is an example, and this is also an interesting example when we talk about selectivity. Many times people say, how are you gonna, you know, achieve selectivity to non-targets? Here's an example where we can show selectivity between two arthropods, so just by a few changes. For example, this particular analog is tick selective. Notice that we have modified one of the essential amino acids, tryptophan, but the tick receptor appears to be less picky in a way because it accepts this change. However, the mosquito receptor does not. Only this analog that has a change in a non-essential amino acid is active. And you can see that the LC50 is not low, but it's not too bad because remember I told you this assay is much less sensitive than the fluorescent assay. So in terms of a double beta peptide, the same situation occurs. The mosquito receptor does not accept changes. In this case, the change in the beta peptide results in a longer distance between the two critical amino acids, so the mosquito receptor is not recognizing the ligand, while the tick receptor is apparently more permissive. So with this single and double beta peptides, we have found active analogs in this case, but none of them reach the 100% activity of the most powerful agonists. So we continue the search for more stable analogs that are protease resistant, and we just published a paper, it's online, in which this double aminoisobutyric acid analog is highly potent and is quite resistant to proteases. So we're about to test this in vivo, and here are the data, here's the data, and it works in both systems. So right now we are doing injections of these analogs, both in mosquitoes, and Ron will begin with some injections in ticks. So another detour of this road was that a few years ago, we thought, well, maybe this could be a good vaccine target. And we did an experiment at Texas A&M with cattle from Kansas. And this cattle was naive cattle. We injected these animals, and the challenge was that we didn't know if GPCRs will be immunogenic in animals. So these animals were kept for a few months in our university. We tested the serum we developed from scratch and ELISA. And it's kind of messy because you have to do under the tail extractions of blood. And so we had the assistance of the vet students that wanted to acquire experience. And I was very happy that they wanted to do this. So after much pain and putting this experiment together, we obtained the Antisera, and we found that many of the peptides in which we divided the receptor were indeed antigenic. And all went well. We moved these animals from College Station through to the tick facility in Mission, Texas. And during the summer of 2005, my poor master students gave me a desperate call telling me, I remember it was the 4th of July, telling me that the animals are dying. And half of them died just by the book. And they gave us the diagnosis of bovine babesiosis. So this is just to show you how difficult tick research can be and the real threat of these diseases for the US cattle industry. And this is not a fantasy, I'm not trying to scare you. This is a fact that happened. And more ticks are being brought from Mexico carrying the disease. We have deer crossing the border that carries this tick. And there is a lot of, that we don't know about how the disease is transmitted and remains in the tick or not, in the deer or not. But we made lemonade out of lemons, and now we have a lot of good antibody, and we are right now doing localization studies on this receptor. And I have data, but I cannot show it to you today. But we're finding some interesting localization that can point to very novel functions, perhaps, of kinins in ticks. So I will thank my collaborators, Dr. Burgard in the veterinary school pathobiology, and Rola helped us begin with the fluorescent studies. Ron is our peptide chemist. Consuelo from Mexico. We have also a CONACyT project for the initial RNAi studies, and Diana is a student from Mexico that came to train in my laboratory. We also obtained the aquarium plasmid from University of Copenhagen, and we were lucky to renew our grant, so if any of you review my grant, thank you very much. That's all, and if I can answer any questions, I'll be happy to do so. Thank you.